everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. The information we present is taken from the writings of Benjamin Krem, a disciple of a Master of Wisdom, and also from teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. We include teachings from many schools of thought to demonstrate how they are working out in the world. Our articles are often inspiring. We hope to inform the public of actions taken around the globe to improve conditions for us all and to find means of addressing some of our most pressing problems.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our program. The theme today is karma, or the law of cause and effect. And I'm going to read to you a keynote talk that was given by Benjamin Krem and published in Share International magazine on that theme. The popular literature in the West about reincarnation is almost exclusively about previous existences. There are now many techniques, authentic or otherwise, advertised and used to take people back into an experience of their past lives, such as hypnosis, rebirthing, and so on. Of course, there is much serious research on the subject going on in several countries. The work of Professor Ian Stevenson and others is adding much evidence pointing to the likelihood of the fact of reincarnation. But is it so desirable to know our past lives? I think if most of us really knew our past lives, there are one or two things we might be a bit ashamed of and maybe would prefer not to know. There is a little known law that when we become truly aware of our past life, we enter into the karma of that time. Most of us have a heavy enough load of karma to deal with in this life without an unnecessary load from some previous one, which happily we are not yet called upon to resolve. Needless to say, you will always find clairvoyance. The channel, the sensitive, is only too happy, usually for a price, to look into your past and to tell you your previous lives. But how can you be sure whether they are right or wrong? In what possible way can you verify what the clairvoyant tells you? If you are told that in a previous life you were important and powerful, and it's usually in the form of a king, queen, or priestess, say you were a priestess in Egypt, how can you prove this? And are you today at least the equivalent in importance, influence, and power in the world, contributing something original and creative to life? Eastern people have a different point of view. They are not so worried about who they were in their past life. They believe that if they are poor, hungry, miserable, indebted to the landlord, with hardly enough to feed their family, they were someone really terrible before. They believe it is the law of karma because they were so bad, nasty, horrible, such low-grade human beings in their past life. They deserve the misery they are in now. They believe that it is the teaching. And they believe, because it is the law of karma, that there is nothing they can do about it. They accept it totally, fatalistically, as their due according to the law. They also believe that if they accept their lot meekly and try to be good, they will be rewarded with a higher status next time round. If there is one thing which has kept the East down in terms of its living standards, its social happiness, social democracy and equality, it is the acceptance of the law of karma on that basis. There is nothing to prevent the untouchables of India from transforming their lives, except the acceptance that their untouchability is due to their misdeeds in former lives. Some kind of balance has to be reached, both from the Eastern and Western viewpoint, in approach to these two great laws, the law of karma, or the law of cause and effect, and its corollary, the law of rebirth. The law of cause and effect is the basic law governing our existence in this solar system. Every thought, every action that we have and make sets into motion a cause. These causes have their effects. These effects make our lives for good or ill. Like all laws, the law of karma is under the control, the jurisdiction of certain entities, in this case, the Lords of Karma. The Lords of Karma are like cosmic judges. They look at this action and reaction of causes and effects which we set in motion, and they regulate this according to our needs as evolving souls. Our souls incarnate in a personality with a given structure of energies, rays, which relate to the karma and the possibilities of that particular incarnation. The souls cooperate with the Lords of Karma to decide, you might think, what pain or pleasure we will suffer in any particular life. That, of course, is precisely the wrong way to describe what happens. The soul is not at all interested, nor are the Lords of Karma, in our pleasure or our suffering. These are simply psychological reactions to events. What they are interested in is the working out of the law, the cosmic law of cause and effect. Also, the soul has its own purposes for every given incarnation. It provides itself with a vehicle, the personality, which is made up of the mental, emotional, and physical bodies, which will provide the possibility for its intentions being achieved in that particular life. That purpose might not be achieved, but the soul provides the possibility. The soul lives ever in hope. The ultimate aim is to live life in such a way that we make no personal karma. We can do that either by being perfect or by being dead. Since being perfect is much more interesting than being dead, most people accept the premise of trying, more or less, to achieve the soul's purpose and staying to the last possible moment to do so. Thus, we work with this burden of karma which we have ourselves created in the present and past lives. We try, consciously or unconsciously, to become perfect. We have no control over the events of life. The only thing we can control is our reaction to these events. So the aim is to achieve such a measure of detachment from events that we can control ourselves. In this way, we cope with the burden of karma in any given incarnation. This is not a case of sitting in a catatonic stupor so that we do nothing and therefore create no karma. What we can do in every event, in every situation, is distance ourselves from that event. Looking at the event as being out there, with ourselves here, and not react. In this way, we gradually create an impersonality in relation to life, a detachment in relation to events, where we become indifferent to whether our karma is good or bad. Correctly seen, evolutionary life is a gradual renunciation of the lower for the sake of the higher. As a soul in incarnation, a high level of divinity has incarnated at a lower level of divinity. The journey to perfection, the evolutionary goal, is the gradual renunciation of these lower levels by embodying at these lower levels, the higher, becoming more and more what one essentially is as a soul. The soul makes its journey into and out of an incarnation over aeons of time. The path of return for the soul is the gradual release of itself from the limitations of the physical, astral, and mental planes. This is done by infusing its vehicles, the physical, emotional and mental, with its energies and qualities. Two things are going on at the same time in this process. One is the gradual spiritualizing of the vehicle by the soul. The other is the burdening of the vehicle intentionally by the soul to burn up ancient karma. As the soul progresses in its incarnational experience, so its reflection, the man or woman in incarnation, receives a heavier and heavier burden of karma. Until, in the last incarnation of all but one, in which the person will be a fourth degree initiate, the burden is at its heaviest. It is for that reason that the fourth initiation is called in the West the crucifixion, in the East the great renunciation. In that experience, everything, all the lower aspects, are being renounced in favour of the higher spiritual reality. That is why the life of the fourth degree initiate is usually, from the world's point of view, painful, heavy indeed. People imagine that as a man or woman progresses in evolution, he or she should become freer and freer of karma. The opposite is true. Not only that, but as a man or woman becomes a disciple, becomes initiate, a world server, he or she takes more and more of the weight of world karma. They are the upholders of the world. Their shoulders are, and need to be, broad. That is one reason why the life of the disciple is, from the average man's point of view, a very difficult life to lead. But, of course, he is governed by the great law of service. Under this law, disciples and initiates come very frequently into incarnation to serve world need and to finish off this earth experience as quickly as possible. Not to get it over with, but to serve the better. The more advanced a person is, the more he or she can serve, the more useful you can be to the world. When a certain level is reached, that of the third degree initiate, the relationship to the law of cause and effect changes. Gradually, the law is manipulated by the person himself. As a conscious divine soul working in the world, he becomes really the pilot of his own plane. He may have a co-pilot, his master, but he is the pilot. It is not an automatic thing, but gradually this point is achieved. He takes an active part in his own evolution, consciously working with the law of karma under the control of his soul. Then it may come to pass that his previous lives will open up before his inner eye. As this happens, the karma of that time becomes open to him on the physical plane, which, of course, increases the burden of the initiate. The aim is that by the time the person is ready to take the fifth initiation and become a master, all karma will have been resolved, burned up, taken back to the source from which it came. How do you get rid of karma? How do you deal with it? You cannot give it away. It is too heavy. Nobody wants it. There's no sale for excess karma. Everyone has enough of their own. So what do you do? How can you cope with this burden that limits your activity, your joy, your happiness? There is a very simple method. It is called service. Service is the way par excellence for getting rid of karma. Of course, it does not get rid of it, but it burns it up. The process is something like this. As you serve, you draw to yourself energy. By giving out energy, you get energy back. That is the law. Basically, it is the law of love, which governs our nature, without which the universe would not exist. It is, of course, in another sense, the law of cause and effect itself. As you give love, you set in motion a cause, the effect of which is the return of love. The law itself sets in motion its own fulfillment. As we serve, we demonstrate love. As we demonstrate love, by law, we get love. That strengthens and potentizes the individual in a way in which he can deal with his own karma. As the person progresses in love and service, he or she automatically distances themselves from the effect of events. The events take place, but they have less and less effect on his psychology. In the East, they say, it's my karma. In France, they say, c'est la vie. Gradually, we have to develop an attitude of c'est la vie. If it is good, easy, c'est la vie. If it is hard, difficult, painful, c'est la vie. We really have to live with that attitude. To return to the subject of past lives, is it of value to know our past lives? After a certain point, yes. Before that point, not only is it not of major value, it can actually be dangerous. And it is irresponsible for so-called clairvoyants to tell people about their past lives, even if they are correct. If they are wrong, people will still create thought forms around that incorrect image of themselves. That makes for glamour, illusion. If they are right, the people involved become subject to the karma for which they may not yet be prepared. There are occasions in certain illnesses of a mental nature which cannot be handled in any other way, in which it may be useful to go back to a previous life. These are relatively few, and the way is through hypnosis. The whole subject is fraught with danger and complexity. When our past lives enter spontaneously into our consciousness, they will do so under law. It is actually more important to understand the law as happening now, not in the past. Of course, it is useful to know that you were a road sweeper in the last life if it gives a sense of proportion. The most important thing is to know that at every moment we are making karma. We are creating our next life right now. The law of karma is a great binding law, but it is benign. Nobody receives more karma than their soul, and the lords of karma know they can usefully handle. Some lives for some people are very hard, very painful, very limited indeed. From the point of view of the soul, this is probably intentional and useful, productive. The soul knows that by the burning in this way of a burden of karma from the past, greater progress can be made. What holds us back, what limits us, is our karma, our load of karma on our back. The efforts made in dealing with the karma pave the way for periods of growth. Our development proceeds thus in cycles. The law of karma is not a mechanical law of punishment. If you hit somebody on the head, it is not inevitable that you will be hit on the head. It is not a question of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It is simply the energetic outcome of previous causes set in motion by ourselves. All that we do would inevitably come back in some way or another. However, we can do something about it. The untouchables of India can change their lives. They're not bound by karma to be untouchables. That is a social structure, a class system which binds people to particular stations in life. It is totally artificial and man-made. The poverty, the squalor, the degradation and the misery of people in the third world is not necessary. It is not a result of karma, but of our greed. And we have the major responsibility to help them change these conditions and enter true living. Until we come into right relationship with each other and with the whole of which we are a part, we will go on making bad karma. It is more important, more useful to realize the benefit of right relationship, harmlessness, thus handling the laws of karma and rebirth correctly, than to know our past lives. So that concludes extracts from Mr. Krem's keynote talk that was given way back in 1986. Thank you very much for listening today. If you'd like further information, check out the website share-international.org. You're also welcome to email us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Wishing you a lovely week.